Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey, clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. And what a day it was. We hit everything today, including Manu Ginobili, Matt Harvey, the Shark Humper, and Smack Off season. Really heating up. We also had three excellent interviews. Arizona Cardinals second rounder Buda Baker, Falcons new DB DeMonte Casey, and Clemson wide receiver, national champion, and former walk-on turn legend Hunter Renfro. All of that and more. So Alvy, do what you do best and roll it. Watching that 39-year-old turn back the hands of time was absolutely incredible. Let's face it, if we're going to be real about this, all postseason, it has looked pretty much like the end for Manu. Down to about 7.5 points a game, shooting below 40% in the regular season. The gas tank sitting on E. He and his dad bod looked better suited for a pickup game at the Y than an NBA playoff matchup against one of the best offensive attacks in the NBA. However, old man Manu has still got a few tricks up his sleeve. And for one night, he played the hits like only he can. When Kawhi Leonard went down, he comes in. Ginobili, 12 points, 7 boards, 5 dimes, no turnovers, and one absolutely legendary block of James Harden from behind to seal the 110-107 OT victory.
Here's the tip, controlled by the Rockets. Anderson's got it left wing, played by Ginobili. Anderson guarded tightly by Manu. Out to Harden. He's double-teamed. Harden tries to work free for a shot, swatted by Ginobili. There's the buzzer. This ball game is over. Manu Ginobili snuffs a shot by James Harden, and the Spurs win game 5 in dramatic fashion.
Thanks to Spurs Radio. Yeah, honestly, that was beautiful. I've got no dog in the fight, but that was beautiful. That was an amazing thing to see. That was his best swat since he knocked that bat into the 10th row back in the day. I mean, that will always be his finest moment as an NBAer when he took out that bat. But this one's pretty close. This one's pretty close. Score one for the legend. A guy who had not blocked a postseason shot from distance in 5 years goes and gets one against the hardest guy in the NBA to swat. Manu hadn't even blocked a three-point attempt since January of 2016. But with the clock ticking to zero, he elevates. He avoids fouling a guy who draws whistles better than anybody else in the association. And he gets his fourth career block of a last-minute game tire or go-ahead attempt. The others coming against scrubs named Kobe, Ray Allen, and Kevin Love. And with the Spurs, who looked as if they had been pushed to the brink, missing their MVP, their Hall of Fame point guard, and needing to find some magic somewhere, Manu takes control. He sends San Antonio out a winner. And that was only after nearly bringing that entire barn right to the ground when he elevated and he flushed one.
Harden straightaway, long three is off the rim, though. Good rebound, Ginobili. It's a 5-on-4. Simmons to Ginobili, drives it inside. Slam dunk, Manu Ginobili. Manu, that is why you do the voodoo that you do so well.
I'll tell you what that is. That's some serious grandpa juice, as Patty Mills glossed it. A wrong foot, right-handed dunk, as Danny Green called it. And on a night when the Spurs badly needed it, 32 minutes for a guy who had not broken the teens in the postseason, a performance that Pop himself knows might be one of the last great ones that he gets from his aging star.
Manu, you know, reached back and gave us one of his Manu performances from past years. He was a stud. You know, we actually went to him with Kawhi off the court. You know, we went to him to generate some offense and to make some things happen.
He was a stud, and he did generate some offense, and he did make some things happen on both ends of the floor. Now, let's forget for a minute what that means going forward. Forget for a minute that Kawhi's injury means, or what it might mean for the Spurs in Game 6 or Game 7 or next round if they get there against Golden State. Let's just all appreciate what we just saw. Let's all appreciate a 39-year-old with the gaslight on and his exit right there on the horizon, revving it up one last time to rip a win that the Spurs had to have. And hitting the Rockets with some serious grandpa juice, emptying the tank to help the Spurs push the Rockets to the brink. 15 seasons in, a couple of months from his 40th birthday, Manu turns back the clock, stuffs the beard at the buzzer, steals an overtime win for Pop and the Spurs. And I got to be straight, I really did not think that that guy had that kind of game in him. I'm not sure his teammates knew that that guy had that kind of game in him, but he proved all of us wrong. I don't know if he can do it again, but I do know that I didn't think that he could do it in the first place. Four rings in a 15-year NBA career and one of his finest moments ever occurring at age 39. Mad, mad respect. Manu, mad respect.
Thanks a lot for having me back, and hi to everybody listening.
We are joined now by Buda Baker. So you've had a little bit of time since the NFL draft. First things first, how does it feel to know that you're now an NFL player, and is it what you thought it would be?
I mean, it feels great, but then again, I'm just real excited to, you know, get to work.
Let's talk about how this all went down. The Cardinals trade up to get you with the number 36 pick. I know GM Steve Keim was on the phone with you. He talked you through the entire process as that trade went down, and then the pick became official. What was that whole process, and then what was that phone call like for you?
Oh, yeah, the phone call, you know, was crazy. He said, this is Steve Keim from the Arizona Cardinals, and I saw that the Arizona Cardinals were at the 45th pick. So in my head, I'm thinking, oh, like, it was about the 35th pick. I didn't know if I was going to last that long. And then he was saying, we're going to trade up to get you. So I was just very nervous until I saw it on the TV that finally the Arizona Cardinals traded up. So once I saw that, then I felt relieved and I was really excited.
Buda Baker joining us. So you're excited, of course, because you get picked and then you realize what you're getting into. As an example, the head coach, Bruce Arians, gets on the phone. He says, quote, I'm doing great now that we got you. We got the most dynamic secondary in the NFL right now, end quote. So what's it mean to hear your new head coach talk about you like that?
It's very exciting. Hearing that was very exciting as well. I watch, you know, Arizona defense, and they do have a lot of versatility. You know, they even have a safety, switch playing linebacker, Tyron, all those guys. And hearing that from him just got me really excited as well, because that was one of my pitching was I'm versatile. So hearing that was great.
You know, in terms of versatility, and you mentioned Tyron, your game has been compared to Tyron Matthews' game quite a bit in terms of that versatility and the variety of things that you can do on the field. So what's your reaction when you hear that, and then how much are you looking forward to playing alongside him?
My reaction is, I'm very excited, but then again, Tyron's his own player and I'm my own player. So I still feel like we're different in some sorts, but it's just going to be very exciting. Learning from, you know, a guy like that, a guy who's, you know, my stature, do things that I've done on film as well. So I'm just going to be very excited to learn from him.
Buda Baker joins us. Now, speaking of Tyron, he's an LSU guy. Patrick Peterson's an LSU guy. And that program has the nickname of DBU for all the defensive backs that they produce. Now, that said, your Washington teammates and fellow DBs, Kevin King, went with the 33rd pick. And Sidney Jones goes with the 43rd pick. So is Washington starting to challenge LSU as DBU?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to. Each year we always talk about how we're trying to be, you know, the best DBs in college football. So it's coming up. It's up and coming. You know, LSU has been, you know, they've created great DBs for a long time. So Washington, we're just trying to. So we're taking steps, and hopefully we'll really be that new DBU.
We're talking to Buda Baker. Now, you had an amazing career at Washington, but you know how the draft evaluation process goes, right? Teams and scouts analyze you and your game, and they try to find flaws. And one of the criticisms that came up about you is that you don't necessarily have an ideal size. I know that's something you've heard for a long, long time. What's your reaction when you hear that? How do you respond?
Yeah, for me, I just say watch the film. You know, I always feel like film will set you free. People can have all these opinions about you, but you know, film is facts, and, seeing me playing safety, seeing me do all the things that, you know, a 5'11", 6-foot safety does should make that size, you know, con go away. So I just say watch the film.
You know, you mentioned at the very top of the interview that you weren't sure that you'd still be around when the 35th pick was made. So when you're going through the draft or even now that it's over, did you take note of the other safeties who went before you, and does that motivate you, or do you feel like you ended up in the right spot so you really don't care who went before you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, everything motivates me. It's not just about the safeties. It's just about, you know, the whole overall players as a whole. So, you know, thinking that I was the 36 best, you know, person in the draft is always going to motivate me. I'm always going to have a chip on my shoulder. But for me as well, I'm also very blessed because I feel like this organization is a great organization that I came into. So I'm very excited to show my skill set and all that type of stuff for this organization.
Clones, can you give me 1 minute so I can talk to you about Ferguson? Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes deeper than plumbing. Pro contractors know to depend on Ferguson for the best in waterworks, HVAC, and facilities maintenance products in the game. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates always working for you. Combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Hey, Buddha, talk to me for a minute about that chip. I mean, I've done this a long, long time, and I can't say how many thousands of guys will say, I've got a chip on my shoulder. Talk about exactly what that means and what that translates into. When you got a chip on your shoulder and it's always there, I mean, what's it mean? Does that roll you out of bed a little bit earlier? Do you stay a little bit later? What does that chip do for you exactly?
Yeah. I mean, that chip's just always going to make me, you know, want to win. I've always been a competitor. I've always wanted to win ever since I was little, you know, having the older siblings and all that type of stuff. They shape you up a lot. So having that chip on my shoulders, I'm always just going to be ready. I'm always going to, you know, be in the film room getting that extra work or, you know, when it's time to run gap, just be first and all that type of stuff. And also my family living situation always, that puts me up. Chips on my shoulder as well. Just my mother, how she's sick and all that type of stuff. And I'm just trying to, you know, show my skill set throughout her. So, yeah.
When you mention your mother Michelle is a cancer survivor. She's also battling Crohn's disease and a number of other conditions. What have you learned from her in terms of mental toughness and refusing to ever give in?
Yeah. I mean, from her, she's the strongest woman, the strongest person I've ever had in my life, met in my life. So for her, it's just she battles. You know, she goes to the hospital every single day. She takes all these, you know, certain types of pills. One pill might not coincide with the other pill, so it might make her even more sick. Just all that stuff like that. So for her to just never give up helps me a lot. Never giving up in football. You know, when things are hard. Just think about her because I feel like, you know, I'd rather be playing football than, you know, doing the things that she has to do every single day. So that just, you know, puts a chip on my shoulder as well and what wakes me up every morning.
New York Mets pitcher Matt Harvey, he does exactly what he had to do. Get in front of his teammates and apologize to them first, then get up in front of the media and apologize for going bonehead and not showing up to work this past weekend.
I'm extremely embarrassed by my actions. I apologize to my teammates, to the Mets organization, to the Wilpons, to, you know, all the way down to the Mets fans for doing what I did. And yes, I was out on Friday night, past curfew. I did play golf Saturday morning, and I put myself in a bad place to be ready for showing up for a ball game that is my responsibility. I take full blame for that, and I've apologized to my teammates. I've apologized to the coaches, and I'm doing everything in my power so that that never happens again. And like I've said, I'm extremely embarrassed for my actions, and I'm working forward to getting things back on track and doing everything I can to help this team win and help this organization moving forward. And they all have my word on that one.
Sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good. Give him that. It sounds pretty good. And you know why it sounds pretty good? He's done it before. He has reps. He has practice. It's not the first time. It sounds pretty good, and it sounds exactly like it did back in 2015 when he missed a mandatory workout during the 2015 NLDS. And remember what he said back then. He promised it would not happen again, just like he did there. But it did happen again. So why should anybody believe or trust him now? Especially since those are the only two incidents that we know about. Given the way the Mets coddle this guy, it stands to reason there were probably other instances as well. The fact that they actually suspended him with the rotation already in tatters instead of just covering for this guy the way they have in the past, it tells you how sick they are of him and his act. I mean, the guy really doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it. This is not a rookie who just showed up in New York and got all caught up. He's 28. He's supposed to be a front of the rotation guy. He's been there several years. He knows what's expected of him, or at least he should. This dude just does not care enough or work hard enough to be that front of the rotation guy, to be a leader. What he needs to do is look to Clayton Kershaw, not for his stuff, because Harvey will never have that ever again, but for Kershaw's approach, for the work that Kershaw does in the 4 days between his starts, for how he prepares himself mentally and physically every fifth day when he does take the ball, for the way he's made baseball his top priority, for the way he leads from the front and puts the entire clubhouse and that organization on his back. Harvey has none of that. He did it for maybe a minute or two, but he hasn't in a long, long time. And once you lose that and you lose the respect of your teammates, it's even tougher to get back, especially when you're not nearly the pitcher that you used to be. This dude is going to have a long way back. And one apology, one that we've already heard in the past from him, is not going to change any of this. He's not sorry for what he did. His decision to file that grievance proves that. How sorry can he be? He filed a grievance. He's not sorry for what he did. He's sorry for the situation he finds himself in right now. This dude needs to dry out, stay out of the clubs, do the hard work in the 4 days between those starts, and take the ball on the fifth day. He has to prove that he can grind and that he gives a damn and that he can still win. And then maybe his teammates and the fans will trust him once again. But respect and trust are not going to come with some apology that he made with a gun to his head. Doughy, lazy, and ill-prepared is a terrible way to go through life. Baseball needs to be his top priority, and clearly it hasn't. And even worse than missing work, because he was out partying, had a migraine, is that report that he was out partying because he was in a funk overseeing photos of his ex, Adriana Lima, out on town with Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman. According to Page Six, quote, this is from Page Six, "The Dark Knight became an emotional wreck on May 2nd after paparazzi photos came out showing Adriana Lima stepping from a limo and heading into Rihanna's Met Gala after party with her former boyfriend, NFL star Julian Edelman. And to add insult to injury, Lima unfollowed Harvey on Instagram after the event. Hashtag, or I should say, end of quote." It's incredible. So this guy apparently became an emotional wreck, at least according to Page Six. And that's why he was out partying, allegedly. Given who this guy is and his lack of grind, would it really surprise anybody if it were true? No, you know what would be surprising? If he was moping around because he couldn't locate his fastball, or because he was relying too much on his slider, or the reason he was up until 4 o'clock in the morning was because he was trying to get another workout in on the treadmill or breaking down some film. That would be surprising. The fact that this supermodel, who was probably never really into him in the first place, had moved on and wrecked his dome, allegedly, that would not be surprising. So let that be a lesson to all the aspiring Derek Jeters out there. The captain made it look easy, but that doesn't mean that it is. Know what you're getting into. And if it's a 35-year-old supermodel who has run through a list of athletes and celebs that rival any hound out there, know that you're more likely to be the one who gets the gift basket, the pat on the backside, and the NDA to sign as the elevator awaits. with the door open. Because there are some guys who are cut out to be supermodel guys, and there are some who are not, even if they get to hang around one for a little while. And while I'm not sure if Harvey's ever going to be the pitcher he was when he arrived throwing gas in Gotham, it seems pretty clear he's not cut out for the Victoria's Secret model who just chewed him up and spit him out. Not if he's in a total funk and had to go out on a bender to forget about it. Hey, Maddie, shake it off. Shake it off and stop looking at page six. It's only going to bum you out, and then you'll be looking once again to numb the pain with another bender and a tee time that's not only going to cost you your gig with the Mets, but maybe your career altogether. Stop looking at page six and be glad that it was only an unfollow and not a block. DeMonte Casey is my guest. All right, so you said going into the draft that it was the most nervous you've ever been before something that you've been working for because you spent your entire life working towards that moment. So for somebody who's never been through it, which is all of us, what was the experience like and how would you describe those nerves?
I would say, I mean, the first time I flew out there for the combine, it was just nervousness. But when I set my foot on that field, it was just like a dream come true. It was like you watch this as you grow up. So just being there was a blessing.
DeMonte Casey joining us. So the Falcons call you when the fifth round comes around, and you know you're going to go in the fifth round. I'm sure that had to ease your mind or your nerves a little bit. What was it like when their turn finally came and they called your name?
Oh, man. When I saw the Atlanta, Georgia area code, it was just like, oh, my God, I'm going to Atlanta. Then picked up the phone, talked to the GM and the owner. So, you know, I just started crying.
That's awesome. I mean, the pick itself was announced by Falcons DB Brian Poole, and he welcomed you to the Brotherhood. Now, I've had a number of members of that Falcons secondary on this show over the last year. It's a really tight group. What's it mean to you to be a part of that Brotherhood now?
Oh, it means a big part, man. It's a blessing to be a part of the Brotherhood now. You know, I'm going to go out there, work my butt off, and, you know, compete with the best and be part of them and try to go back to the Super Bowl.
All right, so I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to say, you're going to join a young, aggressive defense that's got a lot of playmakers that came as close as you can to winning a Super Bowl. You could have gone to any team in the NFL, so what's it like to go to a team that can compete for a ring immediately?
Just Atlanta, period. This is beautiful out there. You know, just to get picked up by the Atlanta Falcons that just went to the Super Bowl was a blessing. So it's like, you know, now I got to really work my butt off, really, really, really work my butt off, you know.
DeMonte Casey joining us. All right, now you had given some consideration to leaving for the NFL a year ago, but you decided ultimately to come back to San Diego State for another year. What was it that made you return to school, and then how different are you as a player right now as a result of that extra year?
What made me come back to school is, like, you know, I was debating, and that's one thing I don't want to do is debate. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to come back to school. I'll talk to my weightlifting coach, Coach Hall. We talked for like 2 hours, and I was like, you know what, I'm coming back to get my degree. It didn't worry about the NFL because it's always life after the NFL.
You know, I made the point that you have got the school record for interceptions, but you've made the point that your best attribute isn't your ability to come down with the ball, rather it's your tackling. Now, some DBs don't really like to put their nose in there. They don't really want to tackle. Why is it that you like to do that so much, and why is that such an important part of your game?
Oh, man. Growing up, you know, my dad coming to the games watching it, and he used to just always tell us, like, if I'm going to pay my money for y'all to play football, don't be going out there being scared. He used to watch us doing hitting drills. So it was like, I have to go hard and tackling. And that's why I always had that mentality in my head, you know, growing up, seeing that.
It's so funny, man. Dads are like that. Like, my boys, they don't play football. They play baseball. But I tell my kids, man, if you're not going to swing the bat, we're not driving all the way out here on Saturday morning to see you play ball, son. Swing the bat. So I see. I know what your dad's talking about, sort of. Now, when you're going through the process, you said, quote, I actually learned a lot when I went to these pro days with other teams with the type of drills that they do and what they look for. It's going to help me in the long run. What was the evaluation process or experience like for you?
Going there and doing these type of drills with the other coaches is like, you know, it's all about, can you pay attention? Can you listen? So it's like, don't try to go so hard, but, you know, get the technique right and see if you're paying attention to what they just said. So it was just like, you know, a blessing is, you know, hear from another coach of what to do and how I'm doing it and getting feedback from it.
DeMonte Casey joining us. I would imagine also that when you go there and you talk to the NFL people and you talk to scouts, they're going to say to you, where do you think you need to improve? And it's always kind of tricky. Like, guys might not own it or cop to it in terms of what they think they have to get better at. So when they asked you that question, where do you need to improve, how did you respond to it?
I'm just finding it to the truth. You know, everybody needs to prove on something. You're not perfect in the world. But I tell them, like, you know, I need to prove on my eye discipline because I played a lot of off coverage and, you know, my eyes getting, you know, the wrong place sometimes and that could put me in a bad position.
All right, so it's a really honest answer, actually. So you want to improve your eye discipline.
Yeah.
From a technical standpoint, how do you go about working on eye discipline?
Oh, man, going down to the press. Press instead of playing off. You know,
right.
Make it more easier. But you could always work. I can always work on that, you know, just paying attention to the wide receiver. Because we get a bad habit of, you know, reading three-step and looking back there too long. So I could work on that.
DeMonte Casey joining us. I would imagine they probably already thought that. They probably already knew that, and they probably appreciated you acknowledging that. So when you come into the league, there's a chance maybe that you play some special teams, but you've got some experience at that. Back in high school in San Bernardino, you were a long snapper. Now, I'm not sure I've ever seen a long snapper with your kind of speed. What was that like?
It was fun because, you know, in high school, they don't get to line up over the center. So every time I just snap it, I just run down there, you know, full speed, make the tackle every play. But I started 3 years at long snapping, 3 years at field goal snapping. So it was kind of fun doing that. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, dude, I'm not saying that long snappers don't have athleticism or speed, but I've never seen one like you. But then again, you're right. If they're not going to line up over center and you get a free run down the field, that probably is pretty cool. Now, your teammate at San Diego State, Donnell Pumphrey, went to Philadelphia in the fourth round. He is the all-time leading rusher in FBS history. Some teams seem to be concerned about his size and how his game might translate to the NFL. You've been around him. You've watched him work for a number of years. What would you tell people who question whether or not his game translates to the NFL?
I don't think they need to question that because he plays much bigger than what his size is. And he's a hard-working player, very fast, and he will try to run you over. So I don't believe in that little small little thing they got going on with him, but he's a great player and a great friend at that.
You know, it's cool for you to pick him up like that. And not only that, but, hey, look, these guys do what they do, but he's not big enough. He's not this. He's not that. How about that rap, too, that, his hands don't measure big enough?
Yeah, I don't know what they mean about the hands and stuff. So I'm honestly not a critic, so I don't know.
Shark Humper Gate 2017 is not going away anytime soon. At least not until we figure out who is the guy in that picture naked on that shark. Might be a while before we figure it out because no one in their right mind is going to openly admit to knowing that shark in a biblical sense, right? Oh yeah, that guy was me. Who's going to do that? The folks at Deadspin, however, are staying hot on the case and they followed up on a lead. A lead that it could potentially be the CEO of Jimmy John's. Jimmy John himself, who apparently is an avid hunter, a fisherman, and an outdoorsman. And he does look like the guy in that photo. But a spokesman for the company said it's absolutely not him. Jimmy John's, freaky fast, but not freaky with fish. Scratch him off the list. Which is bad news for Florida head coach Jim McElwain. Because now all eyes turn back to him again, even after Florida had dropped that rather tepid denial, quote, he's told us it's not him. Not it's absolutely, positively not him. Just he's told us it's not him. They're going to have to do better than that to get folks off of McElwain. And then when he had that chance, when McElwain had that chance himself, when he had the chance to get people to look the other way, to get them off of him. He had a sit down with the Orlando Sentinel. McElwain was asked point blank. He was asked point blank if it was him who went Netflix and Gil. Here's how he responded.
You've become part of this big viral photo.
Sure.
I mean, what's your feeling on this situation?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know who it is, but it isn't me.
I mean, what's your just feeling in general? Just that something like this could even get out there and become a story.
Well, I guess that's for you guys to answer. And, you know, in the world we live, what is a story? I just know this. It isn't me.
I mean, that's all he had? That was the response. It isn't me. It isn't me. Look, I'm not saying it is him. Let's be very clear about that. I'm not saying it is him. I'm saying he had a chance to put this thing to rest once and for all, a chance to find that highest rooftop in the land and scream as loud as he possibly could. I'm not the guy who got naked and humped that dead shark. That's not me. and I'm going to sue anyone and everyone who even suggests it's me. Any website, any blog, any Twitter egg with a single follower. That's not how I roll. That's not how I get down. That's not my deal. I don't know who the hell that deviant is, but I want to make it crystal clear. It ain't me. Say it one more time, and I will see you in court where my attorney and I will be ripping everything you own. But that's not what he did. And he didn't do himself any favors with that denial either. Again, I'm not saying it's him. I'm saying I would have been a hell of a lot more emphatic if it wasn't me. If it wasn't me. Like I said, I'd not only find the highest rooftop, I'd get naked on the highest rooftop and said, look at me. Look at him. It's not me. Hey, coach, one more thing. If you're going to start an answer with first and foremost, there needs to be a second or a next or a furthermore or even an alibi. Like if you weren't mounting sharks on the open seas, well, where were you? Because right now your I did not have sexual relations with that shark defense is about as believable as Bill Clinton's.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Hey, look, if I'm this coach, I drop everything I'm doing. I put everything on pause. It is the offseason. Spring ball is over. I stop all recruiting trips. I become the lead detective on this hunt for the humper. Go Law and Order SVU on this smiling, naked, plump shark pimp. And do not rest until you find this shark Jeter. Because until then, everybody's going to assume it's you. I'm telling you, the last thing you want is for Shark Humpergate 2017 to bleed into the week of July 10th for SEC Media Days. Or it's going to become a thing all over again. Or even worse, the week of July 23rd. You know what that is. I know you know what that is, Jim. Discovery Channel's Shark Week. It is a sea world. Sick world that we're living in, Coach. Hunter Renfrow. So when you look back on the national championship game and your reception to win that game with just 1 second left, now that we're a little bit farther removed from it, what kind of thoughts and memories do you have about that moment?
Well, just an unbelievable experience, honestly. Just going back and being able to do that for growing up in the state of South Carolina, just doing it for the state of South Carolina, and growing up a Clemson fan, just what it means to, or meant to so many people around Clemson and really the state of South Carolina is unbelievable.
You know, you watch that final catch, you get open, you make the reception, you secure the ball, you take a big hit, and then you get up and you seem really pretty calm. I mean, were you feeling calm in that moment?
See, my first reaction was, all right, let's look for yellow on the ground. And then my second thought was, all right, I'm a big fan of college football. I've watched Michigan where the band runs out on the field and all that. So I was like, let's get this kick. I didn't know it was going to be an onside kick. I think Coach Scott tackled Coach Sweeney on the sideline there and gave him concussion, and Coach Sweeney decided to go with the onside kick. But just it was unbelievable.
Hunter Renfrow joining us. Now, that touchdown was the fourth that you've scored in two national championship games against the Crimson Tide. Some guys shrink when the spotlight is bright. You seem to get even bigger. Is it something that you can consciously dial up in that moment or something you somehow tap into?
I think my relationship with Christ and just knowing that the game is not as big as life, and so there's not as much pressure in that moment. I know I'm doing it for my teammates. And I'm doing it for the guys around me. I'm doing it for my coaches, doing it for their families, and just having fun. Growing up, being able to dream that moment, and every kid runs around the backyard dreaming of catching a game-winning touchdown in the national championship. So just being able to draw from that really helps me.
I think that's true, but not every kid grows up doing some of the things that you did. As an example, there's this amazing story, and the Greenville News recently did a short documentary about you, and in it, your mother, Suzanne, tells a story about how when you were a kid, you'd come in all sweaty and dirty from playing football, and she'd ask you if you were playing with the other kids, and you'd say, no, you were playing with the trees. You'd throw the ball up in the air, you'd see how many trees you could ricochet off of before you caught the ball. What do you remember about doing that? How much fun was playing that game when you were a kid?
Yeah, she might have talked that up a little bit more than it was. But, no, I mean, just remember being out in the front yard, and those trees are like defenders. You got to kind of ricochet off them, and they don't call pass interference in the front yard. So you got to hit them hard and get up and make a catch. So just the good times, and that's really – Coach Sweeney always talked about visualizing it. That's really where I started to visualize playing college football and being able to walk on and play with my teammates.
Okay, now you walked on because you were a quarterback at Socastee High School, and you had a really nice career, and you had offers from schools like Wolford and App State, but instead you did decide to walk on to Clemson, where there was no guarantee that you would ever see the field. Why did you decide to do it that way?
I think through a lot of prayer, a lot of talking to my parents. Coach Sweeney is a very godly man, and that's why I've been successful, because of his godly leadership. And I just knew it was the right fit for me, and I knew if I wanted to go somewhere, I wanted to play with the best, and I feel like Clemson offered that. And I never wanted to look back 10 years from now and saying, why didn't I? And all they can say, no. And so I just went for it, and it worked out.
Yeah, you wonder then, so is that in part that maybe you go there, maybe you have success, but in the back of your mind, would you always have been thinking, I wonder if I could have done that at Clemson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a large part of the reason why I went to Clemson, because I didn't want to live with that if. And I'm glad how it all worked out, and I got 2 more years to go expand on it.
You know, I want to ask you about how you approach those next 2 years, but let me first ask you this. Deshaun Watson says from the very moment that you arrived and you started to play on the scout team, the defensive players kept saying, this guy's going to be something special. So what were the early days like on that scout team, and did you feel like you'd be able to break through and get on the field at some point and then do something special?
Yeah, it was tough. I think my redshirt freshman year, we had the number one defense in the nation. Coach Venable does a great job over there. We had Stephon Anthony, Mackenzie Alexander, TJ Green, some of the guys who play in the NFL, and it was every single day we had to grind against them and get them ready for their next opponent. And so I knew if I could get open against those guys, then we're going to play guys down the road that we're going to be not as talented or as talented as those guys and just be able to make plays against them. And just doing it in practice gave me confidence. And when you got a guy like Deshaun or whoever may be back there throwing at Clemson, just trying to make them look good.
Last thought, you played with Deshaun Watson, so you know his game as well as anybody. How do you think his game translates to the NFL, and what are his teammates in Houston going to learn about him that maybe they don't know already?
Well, Deshaun's a leader, and that's up front, and a lot of people know that. But just how he cares for everybody in the facility, whether it's the janitor, whether it's the head coach, whether it's a little walk-on like me, just from day one, just his personality and his experiences that he's been through his life, just give him the opportunity to be able to handle any situation he's put in. And I think he's going to translate great, not just because he's my quarterback, but because, I mean, he's very accurate. He gets the ball out of his hand fast. And I'm excited to see what he can do with another Clemson receiver and DeAndre Hopkins up there.
We go to Salt Lake City. Zach, what's going on?
Yo, Rome, congratulations to the Warriors and their clean sweep on my Jazz. I hope they were bored as hell with our nightlife. Being a Warriors fan is really cool, though. I hope all you new fans remember how bad your franchise used to suck. Like one playoff appearance in 17 years suck. And now for the real reason I'm calling, Romy, to shed light on these groupies to real callers on Twitter. We all know exactly who these nerds are, like Jacob and NorCal. You're the guy whose smack-off chances are DOA, the dude who waits on hold for hours and periscopes about it later. This is the guy who asks if he's on the list. Bro, the only list this guy makes is for groceries. Behind every one of these real caller groupies is a large DVD collection and a hell amount of real caller retweets. So come at me, real caller groupies. Just remember to do what you do. Tweet exactly what he said and she said. You chumps are always a day late and a $50 gift card short. And to the real caller groupie in Costa Mesa, clowning on my Jazz and asking where my laid-back flow is at, where am I at, bro? I'm in the mountains, breathing pure fresh air while you're sitting in traffic, sucking on each other's tailpipes. I'm out.
It's not going to get it done, Zach. That's not going to get it done. It's not bad, though. Let's go to Matt in L.A. Matt, good morning. What's up?
Vance, thanks for the vine. Hey, you might as well call that smack off 2017 the NHL playoffs, homeboy, because we all know Canada has no shot at that title either. Running out Skyler from the oil fields, and it's Pat from Vancouver. Come on, man, that's tantamount to Toronto v. Cleveland or Salt Lake v. Golden State. A snowball's chance in hell, Romy. But Utah, thankfully, since they're gone, maybe that countless hack Zach will shut his mouth now. Hey, Zach, Take your non-rhyming raps and peafowl yelping rendition of Def Leppard's Hysteria on Twitter and shut your punk ass up, son. The jungle is for real men and real fans, not whining boy band man crushers. At least you didn't bring that officiating garbage into the jungle, bro. Oh, yeah, Ballsy, you billionaire bootlicker, show some sack. Back up the Brinks truck and bring in some winners, because this Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DJ squad needs to be dismantled and upgraded. Hey, or else we're going to send your Sad Sack Minnow franchise back down to loser San Diego. That's all I got, Romy. War Cleveland and LeBron still not being MJ after they go back-to-back. Out.
All you punk asses got that? Matt in Omaha. Good to have you, Matt. How are you?
Good. How are you, Jim?
Great.
First time, long time. You know, to me, you're not a pimp in the box no more. You're the wizard of the window.
I'll take that.
Great show gets me through my day every time. Before I get to G-Off or whatever his name is up in no land, Zach, come down out of your grandma's attic. Take off the gas mask. Lick a window. That's all I got to say. Geoff, Jeff, whatever, that you called in 7 years. 7 years? People get it, dude. You were in prison. You would just didn't take a break. And your own landscaping company, homeboy, or whatever you want to call yourself, owning your own landscaping company isn't putting on an orange jumpsuit and cleaning up the interstate in that crap hole town, and you're calling yourself a baller? No, I'm sorry that you had to shank your prison mate to get a 5-minute phone card to call the Jim Rome show. And being a baller in the shower on Friday night is not a party. I'm done with you. And then being on hold with this girl from Podunk, Texas that called about the Spurs. Newsflash. Trump's building a wall around Texas now because you're worried more about basketball than football. I'm sorry that you had to run through your trailer.
That's not a good car. No.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
I had to pull that guy before somebody else got eviscerated. Matt in Omaha. Eviscerating fools. Lick a window, chump. I've only got a couple of minutes left. What could happen? Jeff in SoCal. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, Rome. Hey, I'm just waiting for that coach to drop. It depends on what your definition of is as one of his defense. Hey, the reason I'm calling in, Rome, Manu Ginobili last night out on the court looking very spry. But here's my concern. Coach Pop on the sideline. Oh, my God, Rome, did you see him last night? This guy looks like he's about 10 minutes away from dying. He makes Edward James Olmos look like Jennifer Aniston in comparison. I mean, I know there's oil in Texas, but San Antonio people, please quit drilling on Pop's face.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Jeff, do me a favor. Call back when the WNBA season tips off. As always, thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you. So do what you do. Hit subscribe, tell a friend, trust the podcast, and check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. See you then.
You're the wizard of the window. Lick a window.
Grow up, get to the gym, and I'm out.